Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, patriots, it is now or never. We got to keep on thanking the good Lord that every day we have another day to step in and save our constitutional republic. Now, I have a special message to Oklahoma, and I will get to that after I take care of the obligatories, and then we're going to get back into the, I'll call them the issues, but we're going to get back into helping you and your candidates. If you're not running, then this is how to help them realign our constitutional rights and powers back into the framework of the Constitution and getting government out of all of the things in our lives that they have no business being involved in or meddling in. So thank you for listening, by the way, and thank you for helping us grow the show. We need more help. We need to get the messages. I'm not making a commission here. I'm not making any money in doing this. I am here as a servant trying to help everybody understand the Constitution. And I love reading these quasi or these facades that consider themselves, let's just say, academics regarding Constitution and constitutional law. We can chew them up and spit them out. And this is one of the reasons why we're going to go through that message to Oklahoma, because this is in regards to that article that I was talking about. And we'll pull that up again so that everybody can see. You know, if you want to go there, I'll tell you where you can go and get this article. I don't want to necessarily put a link on it because I believe, well, let me get into that after I do the obligatories, right? First things first. As you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that goes through the academic and academic evidence-based solutions of what we need to do. And so one of the things that we're out trying, and actually I hope to be able to talk to the owner, the operator, the entrepreneur who is starting the Wyoming Conservative Chronicle. I want to find out, you know, what did it cost for them to get started? What did it cost for them to, you know, do these, you know, to buy the printing press? Do they own it or they rent it or what? And so, because this is a monthly periodical, right? It's a monthly paper, not a daily paper yet. And I'm sure that they want to get to a point where they can actually grow their subscription from a monthly subscription to a maybe a weekly or what have you. We'll find out. I'd like to have the conversation first. Now, as we kind of look at, you know, today, we want to do a couple of endorsements because I've actually got quite a few. I used to go through all of them, but it took a lot of time to go through all of my endorsements because a lot of times I just don't make it a 1 minute endorsement. I actually get into, you know, better details as to why you really need to be getting involved with these different companies and organizations. And as we create this long list, this is a list that people aren't paying for to get on. This is a list that people have to deserve to be on because it's based on, and I want to hear, I'm speaking in sentence fragments, so I'll try to slow down. I would love to hear positive and or negative experiences that you may have had regarding any of these companies that I'm endorsing. I know we all have a bad day, and so, you know, I believe that we have to have a little forbearance when we're dealing with some companies. Some companies may just be, you know, well, it's never good to be rude, but they may be short or what have you. But I'm standing behind these companies, and if we need to reevaluate, because, you know, to be honest, it's just not there. They're not providing the services or products anymore, then let me know, and we will actually bring that up, okay? So as we kind of go through these obligatory comments here, let me just say this, that if you're looking for financial guidance and financial support, the best place for you to get that support and get that guidance is Fortitude Financial Coaching. This is all based on Dave Ramsey's school of thought. Believe it or not, he's kind of created his own little certification academy. And Gary Smith with Fortitude Financial Coaching has gone through all of that. And if you've listened to our interview last December, then you'll know that Gary is doing this not to act, because he's actually got, you know, he's a retired Marine. And it's not like he's in a position where he has to do this. He really is doing this because he wants to help. He himself going through life never is, and he talks about this in his story, that, you know, he started listening when he was a young man, early on in his Marine Corps career, of, you know, learning to finance and learning to budget, those types of things, and controlling his money. Even though he had these tapes and he used to listen to this radio show, he never applied those theories in his life. And it went through a long time, through his entire career and into his second career in working with a different company, that, you know, he started realizing that he was literally living hand to mouth. And so he decided to take control of his finances and take control of his life financially. And he's turned his life around to where he has the resources and the ability to just retire if he wants to. What he wants to do is actually help others. And, you know, I believe that the pricing is perfect for you. Give him a call, Fortitude Financial Coaching. If you don't know how to find him, he's on our links page or other links or what have you. So go contact Gary for financial coaching. See, this is why it's hard to just do a simple endorsement. I endorse this guy. I endorse that guy. I want you to know why. Anyway, our other endorsement is, and I've said this a lot, and I can't say anything bad when it comes to American hardwood, because American hardwood it makes the best furniture. And so what I would recommend is just go to timbernation.com. Now, if you have audio equipment, you have an entertainment, you know, layout design, you can do that. If you want something unique, something different, then they can do this for you. They can actually make you a very strong, stable piece of furniture. Go look. I mean, we're talking 2 inches thick, solid walnut, solid oak, solid maple, solid cherry, whatever American hardwood you want. Hickory. That's right, hickory. Hickory's a beautiful wood. We have cabinets made of hickory. And I look at them, and you kind of want to call it an oak, but the grain is, it's kind of like a fusion between oak and walnut, the way the grain, it's a lighter look. It's not a dark, deep, dark wood like walnut. But anyway, hickory may cost you more because it's a very, very, very hard wood. It's one of the world's hardest woods, and so you can... It can take some punishment. If you need something that can take some punishment, like a desk or what have you, then you may want hickory. But anyway, go to timbernation.com and get your order in, because these guys do everything by hand. It's everything that's personally done. It's all customized. So in other words, it's not like they're putting an order to go to China, Indonesia, or somewhere in the Far East, or anywhere else in the world. The work is being done by these patriots, and it's this family business out of Pennsylvania. So with that, I also want to quickly plug in, if you're a candidate, I'm hoping to have very soon the pricing of what it would cost for you if you wanted to just have a turnkey so that you don't pay anybody. I know you can go cheap, and a lot of people can do some of this stuff themselves. That's a lot of time. It's a lot of time, effort, and maintenance and management and so forth. Getting Ad Local to do this, we're going to give you, and you may have a shock value, oh my gosh, it's going to cost that much? To actually have a portal for people to, you know, quickly be able to contribute. One of the things I want to add to this, because I want you to understand that evangelical and most Christian faiths and churches are going to online pay systems, whether they use PayPal or some service or what have you. And remember, in the old days, they used to have passing the plate for contributions. Well, nowadays, they actually just say, if you want to contribute, it's time to consider contributions. If you want to contribute, you know, go to our webpage. We've got a PayPal portal right there, and you can contribute right there. So in the old days with the plate, when they passed that around, they, you know, it was almost like this moment of shame when that plate got in front of you. Were you going to be too cheap to contribute? And so they're doing the exact same thing today when, you know, they call on people to contribute and what have you. You can see who's pulling their phone up and who's going there and actually contributing. You know, the only people that would know whether you're actually contributing or not are those people who are sitting behind you that can see your screen. But it's almost like you have to go through the motions to make it seem like you're really throwing something in there. Oh, well, it's only a $1 bill. But my point is that to be able to do these types of things for your candidacy, so while you're standing in front of your audience, they have the ability with their handheld device to contribute to your campaign immediately right there. That right there pays dividends for any candidate to be able to walk away from an event and have money in their bank from that event. So having AdLocal do this and have them be able to just kind of provide this so that it just happens, this is what people need to have. And there is a price to that. And as a matter of fact, what they want to do, and having this conversation, I'm not even going to go there. I won't go there because I think it's best to just bite my tongue and let's focus on the Constitution. So with that, what we want to do is we want to get into this message for Oklahoma. And so if you know anybody that lives in Oklahoma, if you know people that are part of the Independent American Party or the Constitution Party, they need to listen to today's, write this down and send them. And you can tell them, hey, tune into the second segment. Just go to the second segment and listen to what GR is telling you regarding this very specific problem you're facing in Oklahoma. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the article that we want to delve into, and the reason why I'm actually taking this extra special curricular activity regarding this article is because, first off, what really caught my eye was the name of the journalist's site. It's called The Conversation. And this is what they claim right there underneath their name. This is them. Academic rigor, journalistic flair, The Conversation. Academic rigor. Now, the article that we've read, that I read, is written by Christine Metoy Carlson. And the little brief you know, expose or resume right there underneath her name that she probably provided is she's a professor of law and adjunct professor of political science at Wayne State University. Wow, I'm really impressed that she's spent so long in the ivory tower that she's obtained those titles. That's hats off, right? It takes a little discipline to get there. However, everything that she has used to gain this elevation in the ivory tower, you know, she's not the pinnacle. She's not the dean, right? She's the dean. But the fact is that everything that she is standing upon in academia is based on false information. Nowhere in this article, by the way, does she cite anything constitutional. Nowhere in this article does she even challenge the veracity of federal government's actions. So this is why we want to start off with just this basic, simple foundation that in 1817, it didn't take long for the federal government, for the general government, for Congress to try to assume powers that they had no authority to assume. When a problem came along, they just wanted to be able to fix it without having to go to the states. It was almost like an insult to them. You could almost start to perceive that the federal government felt that they were better than the parties that controlled them, that they didn't like the idea that they had to subjugate themselves to the states to be able to do the things that they felt they needed to do. They felt that they were entitled to do these things. So they presented a bill to James Madison to create the footings for the Department of Transportation. And James Madison backhanded them, I could say something slapped them, right? Expletive slapped them, and basically told them that they can't do this, that these powers are not enumerated, that if they wish to exercise these powers, they must amend the Constitution. They tried again with Monroe, 1822. And so in 1822, in Monroe's second term of president, they tried to create the Department of Transportation again. And he told them that even if you combined all of these justifications, none of them can be derived from one enumerated power or any enumerated power, that they must amend the Constitution to create a Department of Transportation. Now, not to be undone, they said, okay, we're going to do this again, and they tried again with Andrew Jackson. We have and it's an academic article because we're citing these presidential vetoes and stating exactly what these men said and why the federal government cannot assume any new power. They must go to the states. So, getting back to this article, this Kristen Carlson makes this huge embracement that the federal government can do whatever it needs to do. How is that academic? Prove to me that that even exists. It only proves to me that she has no clue what the Constitution is and that it is an enumerated Constitution, that there are no general powers delegated to the general government. It is all enumerated. And it's not just enumerated powers. As we just went through in our first iteration on Monday, we went through what these enumerated powers were. Not just enumerated. As a matter of fact, I'll get right to the language here. Because when one looks at the Constitution, there are enumerated roles, there are enumerated responsibilities, there are enumerated property, right? And powers. So there's four right there. And it also enumerates judicial jurisdiction. In other words, how far can the court go? And to prove this, to prove how far the court can go, we actually get into the 11th Amendment. Now, what I didn't do was I didn't tie the 11th Amendment on Monday when I covered this judicial jurisdiction. Why? Because, folks, It wasn't long for this federal government to be operating where the states all of a sudden jumped in and said, hey, hold up. You cannot construe that a lawsuit between a private citizen and another state can actually be pulled into, and it cannot be construed that it is within your jurisdiction. that clearly your jurisdiction is limited to the enumerated powers. If this is dealing with a land dispute, if it is dealing with anything that you have no jurisdiction, no enumerated association in that Constitution, then you have no jurisdiction over the matter. You can't pull it in as a case for federal review. In other words, the appeal process ends with the state. It's that simple, folks. States have that sovereignty. States have that right. And it's clearly enumerated in the Constitution. That's why the Constitution in Article 3, Section 2 clearly identifies that the judicial power only extends to those things that are within the Constitution and those things that are in pursuant to the Constitution. In other words, the laws that are derived from those enumerations. Now, clearly, folks, clearly, we have this huge perversion of what our Constitution is, and everybody's running around claiming it is something that it is not. Like this, maybe this do-good professor, I don't know, I really don't want to speak ill, but the fact of the matter is, don't tell me you're an expert when you don't even know the foundation and the fundamentals. The only way, and this, I've got to reach out. I'm going to start talking to people that are offering constitutional classes because we have to stop perpetuating the lie. We have to start teaching exactly what the Constitution is, that it is a compact. We need people to start fathoming that this Article 7, the most important part of the Constitution is Article 7. Because it clarifies exactly what the Constitution is and who are the sovereigns over it. Who has the full control to define and to articulate whether it is constitutional or not. And it has nothing to do with the Supreme Court. Only those things within the Constitution does the Supreme Court have jurisdiction to do those things and not to interpret. If they want to go down the path of interpreting, the states can easily step in and say, sorry, that actually conflicts with our definitions that we received during the ratification debates. You can't make it up as you go along, court. You have to be tied to these very specific terms and definitions. And if you want to start going out beyond because it is not defined, then we'll step in and help define it for you because we have that power. We are the almighty, powerful union that created you. It's really that simple, folks. And it doesn't even have to be hostile. It wasn't supposed to be hostile. It was supposed to be symbiotic. There was a symbiotic relationship that the federal government was dependent upon the states for its powers, that the federal government would be dependent upon the cooperation of the union in working in harmony, in elevating enlightenment in this new world. Anyway, let's get back into this article, though, because I'm going down a rat hole, and But I think these things are helpful. I hope that these things are helpful. In this article, this professor has a map of Oklahoma that basically shows that there is no land that belongs to the state, that this entire state belongs to these different tribes of Indians, that Oklahoma is not a state in the Union. Well, hold on here. Did they receive an enabling act? Yes, they did. And was that enabling act based upon the Constitution? No, it was not. As a matter of fact, that's why I told you in 1906, when Oklahoma finally became a part of the Union, they had created so... There was a reason why they waited so long, even though Oklahoma was one of the first states, you know, west of Missouri, to actually start getting organized. There were reasons why they kept them out. And there were reasons why they wanted to do exactly what they did to not just Oklahoma, but to almost every single Western state. They started creating, because a problem came along. They were dealing with these Indians that they didn't know what to do with. They didn't want to force them into the Union. But what they should have basically told them is say, look, you know, we'll put you out here and into our territory, but this territory is going to be turned into a state. And if you do not want to become a citizen, because by the way, you know, we're working to actually control the land from sea to shining sea. So in other words, from the East Coast to the Pacific, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean of what we call the United States, these will become sovereign states. So you either assimilate or you need to go somewhere else, go north and live under the rule of Britain in the Commonwealth of Britain in Canada, or you can go south and let the paradigm of the Portuguese and the Spaniards, you know, rule you, because look at what they did. I've said this so many times. Go look at how Spain and Portugal honored the laws of nations. They didn't honor the laws of nations. To be clear, they did whatever they wanted to do, which is why they were considered ruthless murderers. And Cortez himself was called Cortez the killer, or Cortez the murderer. Anyway, we'll get back into this article, and this may take this whole show, but we have to go through this article. I'm going to go through, I'm not going to read it, but we're going to go through the points. We'll be right back with those points after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so getting into this article, and when I start reading articles, and I've become far less tolerant towards journalists who talk about constitutional issues and actually and directly mischaracterize the Constitution, I honestly believe it is a very dangerous world we live in when we can allow somebody to make a comment that absolutely mischaracterizes the Constitution. If the Constitution was a person, the Constitution would actually sue each of these journalists, each of these professors, each of these politicians for libel, by mischaracterizing and actually outright lying and deceiving the people, whether they know it or not. The problem is that we've gone so long as a society not understanding the Constitution and allowing people to actually create a foundational lie of the Constitution that many of the people, such as possibly Kristen Carlson, doesn't realize that she is perpetuating a lie, misleading and mischaracterizing, and actually participating in rebellion against the Constitution. In essence, we have insurrections that are used with guns And we have insurrections that are used with words. This is the ultimate in the final bastion of our liberty, when we've allowed the enemy to speak and define the Constitution, outright deceiving us, or in absolute mischaracterization and misrepresentation of what that Constitution is and what it really means. It is one thing to make an opinion about what one wants to interpret out of the Constitution, but to assert, to insist something that is false about the Constitution for a journalist, as far as I'm concerned, is tantamount to treason. You're using treasonous words, because you have to understand that the reading audience, and they see this name, that this person is a person of authority. It's like a politician standing up in front of us and telling us that climate change is going to destroy us and we need to invoke these new laws and so forth. But bottom line, if we held them accountable for what they asserted, and if they asserted falsehoods, then they should be removed. They should be thrown in jail for actually asserting, for trying to make it an assertion of us to surrender our liberty so that they can control us, all based on false lies. One of the things that I have at the very end of this document that we call, you know, the realigning, or, you know, the Bill of Rights of 2022, this, and I'll go to the long title, the Comprehensive Constitutional Positions to Campaign on for County, State, and Federal Elections. At the very end of this document, I have this little scripture out of Deuteronomy, and it's Deuteronomy 19, verses 16 through 19. And we need to move towards this base of law, this fundamental, if we want to get rid of corruption, if we want to get rid of lies and deceit in our society, we need to invoke this paradigm of law and law enforcement. I'm going to read the scriptures to you. Again, this isn't about, you know, spiritual salvation. This is about protecting and defending the Constitution as the supreme law of the land. It is what grants us, or I should say, it is what legally positions our inalienable rights as irrevocable. When we let this document go, those inalienable rights go with it. Because we live in a time when everything is arbitrary and everything is to suit the whims of those who rule us instead of the rule of law. Now, if a false witness rises up against any man to testify against him that which is wrong, then both the men between whom the controversy is shall stand before the Lord, or the judge, or in common law case, before the jury of the people. And it says, before the Lord, before the priests and the judges, which shall be in those days. So in other words, you're standing up in front of, you know, God and everybody. And in common law, that would be a court in a trial by your peers, which would be, a jury. And the judges, or the jury, shall make diligent inquisition. And behold, if the witness be a false witness and hath testified falsely against his brother, in other words, made this false witness, made a lie, then shall ye do unto them as he had thought to have done unto his brother, so shalt thou put away evil among you, or from among you. So reading these scriptures, and go read it for yourself, what we need to do is, when somebody actually comes along and starts lying or perpetuating a lie, they don't do the due diligence for themselves. It's one thing to say, you know, Dr. Seacart or Dr. Allen, you defined the Constitution this way. As a matter of fact, at the very beginning of one of my issues I'm going to have here, I actually am using different sources. I'll use in one particular issue Harvard Law, And I'm doing that deliberately because if you understand Harvard Law or Harvard Law, then you will understand that we can't necessarily trust an Ivy League school because they're progressives. But ironically, they got it right. There's nothing wrong with what they said in how we define something very specific. So when you get somebody that actually agrees on your position that actually comes from the left, I'm willing to take that as long as it has to agree, though. It has to agree on the foundation of how things were defined, not how things have been redefined. And so when we're looking at this article, we're looking at basically this Kristen Carlson as somebody that is making it. It's not like she's saying that these other people or, the courts have this type of thing. She's actually in her commentary, in her editorializing, stating things as a fact, like these Indian countries are legitimate countries. They're not. There's nowhere in the Constitution that allows an Indian country to exist within the framework or within the boundaries of these United States. This is a big problem, folks, and this is why we have to deal with this domestic abuse. This has been immoral and it has been wrong, and what we need to do is end it. Regardless of how we got to where we are, it is a fact that reparations is not within the Constitution. When we finally realize that there is something wrong, we are obligated to fix it and move forward. There is nothing, unfortunately, there is nothing within the Constitution that, and I should say unfortunately, as a matter of fact, maybe fortunately, there is nothing in the Constitution that allows restitution or what we would call reparations. When bad characters, what we can do is we can hold these people who have done all of these ills, all of these sins, committed all of these crimes, we can hold them accountable, even if they're dead. If it makes you feel better, dig them up and burn them in effigy. If that's what makes you feel better, if you can't move on, then that's what we have to do as a nation, a massive grave digging and pulling up all of these people who have done wrong, such as FDR, such as Teddy Roosevelt, all Wilson, all of these evil people, and that the people alive, they'd be tried, they'll go through the due process because they can't and should be able to defend themselves. And then we can actually ship these people over to China and all these other places where they can get their pound of flesh if they really feel that they've been wronged, and because they have been equally, China is equally culpable in trying to undermine our liberties and undermine our constitutional government. They have been hostile towards us and all foreign nations, even Britain, from the day we created this Constitution, has been out to undermine us. And I'm telling you, as Washington told the nation, that all these other nations are out to undermine us. The process of dealing with other nations, this only affirms me more and more on my, I don't want to say interpretation, the paradigm that the framers have endowed with, these words, these concepts, these principles that they created this Constitution, that the only way we can actually have an open alliance with any other state in the world is for that state to go through the process of becoming a part of this union. If not, it is a foreign state and must always be looked at as a hostile state. No compromises. You just can't do that. And as a matter of fact, I don't see anywhere in the Constitution where they can do that, where they can put an alliance above our own interests. They can't. They can create trade agreements and trade alliances, but not political alliances and agreements to where we start agreeing to abiding by laws that do not go through the constitutional process. Sorry, folks. They just can't do it. Now, in Oklahoma and in the Oklahoma case, I mentioned the enumerations are very clear, or stated differently. Wow, is it really time already? Wow, I am so sorry, folks. I guess the Deuteronomy scriptures kind of held me up. We will wrap up this Oklahoma segment in this next segment, because it's the last segment, because tomorrow we will get back into the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and realigning our rights back into the constitutional framework. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as I said, there is no authority for the general government. Let me start off to where I left off, because we had been talking about enumerations. The fact is that the lack of enumeration granting the general government the power to enable a state to be sovereign, a sovereign state, is very, very clear that only a sovereign state can be created. Go read Article 4 of the Constitution and go read the enabling portion where states can become a part of the Union. Folks, there is nowhere in there that when a state becomes a part of the Union, it is anything less than an equal state of the Union. There is nowhere that says that the federal government can determine the level of sovereignty amongst a state joining the Union, which is why the very few beginning states, when they actually abided by the Constitution, all the states that came into the Union were equally footed or had equal footing, or the doctrine of equal footing was applied. In other words, that state and all of its land belonged to the state, that state was a full sovereign state in the Union and had all of the same levels of sovereignty as every other state in the Union. There is nowhere in the Constitution or any amendment to empower the general government to actually start fiddling and meddling with the sovereignty level of a state where some states were subjugated. Now, some people believe that Texas, because Texas had the language in its enabling act that it was sovereign and had, you know, was still to be treated as an independent, that it had something special. Sorry, the federal government has no, or general government has no authority in the Constitution to create any deviations of the state at any level, elevating one above another or subjugating any under the rest. Sorry, folks, the federal government can't do this. And so what they did with Oklahoma, what they did with many of the states, but Oklahoma is a shining example. So what we now have is the fact that the federal government has created these problems. They went down, and as I stated before, they violated not the government itself, but people that were appointed. This goes back to, do we have a corrupt government? No, it is our people, our public servants, who are not complying to the Constitution, who are violating it and causing problems. We have to hold them accountable, every single one of them. And Section 3 makes it simple to do. Okay, so the burden for anyone to prove otherwise, like this Kristen Carlson, is to show in their article of that the Constitution or any of the 28 amendments, one or all of the 28 amendments ratified to this Constitution, that the general government has been granted the power to take state land and use it for the keeping of people, trees, plant life, animals, minerals, or anything that the general government wants to possess for themselves. This actually begs the need for reading this thing of what we call, excuse me here. What I want to do is I want to actually go to the amendment that Thomas Jefferson recommended. And let me see if I can find it really quick, because Thomas Jefferson went out of his way to create an amendment to the Constitution to actually empower the federal government to possess land differently, or I should say, for other purposes than what the Constitution basically, had in it. And so, let me see if I can find it. We've got six here. There's not that one, that one. And Jefferson's draft on an amendment to the Constitution, 1803. And I'm going to read this really quick. The province of Louisiana is incorporated with the United States and made part thereof. The rights of occupancy in the soil and or self-government are confirmed to the Indian inhabitants as they now exist, pre-exemption only of the portions rightfully occupied by them and the cessation of the occupation of such as they may abandon with the full rights of possession as well as of property and sovereignty in which is not all shall cease to be rightfully occupied by them shall belong to the United States. Okay, so this is an amendment he's proposing because this land actually came into the hands of the United States government and we owned it. In accordance with the law, the laws of nations and the laws of the United States, they actually bought this. And he's trying to create a case to allow sovereign states of Indians to exist. The legislature of the Union shall have authority to exchange the right of occupancy in portions where the U.S. have full right of for lands possessed by Indians within the U.S. on the east side of the Mississippi, to exchange lands on the east side of the river for those to the west side of the river. So in other words, he's talking about being able to drive them to the west. In other words, allowing Indians to take some of those lands instead of, allowing them to stay here. Now, again, there was no need to drive them out. He was basically trying to offer them an option because they were going to become encompassed in a nation that they may not want to become encompassed in. So you got to remember that at this point in time in the world, every nation, even China, Russia, all of these nations were basically brokering to aggrandize themselves by conquesting land over, and this was not just a Western society. Again, like I pointed out, China was doing this. Japan, all of these foreign nations had been basically proliferating themselves around the world, claiming land for themselves in conquest. So what the United States was doing within its own boundaries and its bordering land was actually working to go out towards these, what we would call, these other indigenous people and the land that they were occupying, because we were claiming this land. And bottom line, we didn't do it as Spain and Portugal. If you look at why there is no contention in the South, in Spain and Portugal, they didn't even have any consideration no consideration whatsoever for the people, the natural citizens, the natives that were there, the indigenous people, whatever you want to call it. Bottom line, this was an amendment to make this adjustment to create the paradigm that Indian states and nations could exist within the Union. This amendment was never ratified. It was rejected, and as a matter of fact, it was rejected for the fundamental principles, as far as I'm concerned, because it did not adhere to this concept of the Union. You cannot have a foreign state amongst you. It flies in the face of all things that make sense and good and of good, you know, good reasoning. You don't let your mortal enemy become an occupant in your home and live amongst you. You just don't do it. And so, and it's not that Indians at this point in time were our mortal enemy. It's not. They weren't. As a matter of fact, they were benefiting and they were already creating this exchange in the South with the Cherokee Nation. They were already getting there. Go read the facts of how the Cherokee Nation were beating the Southerners at their own game of enterprise. And they were loving it. So whether we like it or not, the indigenous people around the world who have never progressed, whether that be in Africa, whether that be here in the Americas, whether that be Australia, whether that be Asia or Europe, it doesn't matter. The people that fell within the boundaries of a conquest nation eventually became citizens. And so if they don't want to be a citizen, they're welcome to be able to go and patriate any nation. And as a matter of fact, I honestly believe that we need to go back to what Jefferson was trying to do with the freemen. But getting back to this, I'm going down the rat hole again. Getting back to this very specific process, in today's perverted constitution, states are not fully sovereign when they actually are by the law of the land. Fact is, they say that states cannot secede from this union when, in fact, as parties and the parties to the compact, any party can secede from a compact when the compact has been violated. That is fundamental contract law. Third, that the states have the constitutional power to deal directly with other states like Indian nations is ludicrous. Within the Constitution currently, the Compact Clause in Article 1, Section 10 prohibits states from being able to create treaties or to create any agreements with any foreign state or even with their fellow states. Whether we like it or not, that is the law of the land. States cannot do that. That's why states must be sovereign and have full sovereignty over their own land. That within this constitutional republic, foreign nations, the concept that within this constitutional republic, foreign nations can buy and control us and our land, our assets, our resources, that's absolutely ludicrous. The federal government has no authority within that constitution. It's not enumerated. They can't do it. The fact that all of these countries have invested in buying up the land, it's almost like you're selling the Brooklyn Bridge. You can go and create a document and sell the Brooklyn Bridge, but that doesn't mean that that sell is legitimate. We're not done, and we do need to wrap this up, so we'll have to wrap this up really quickly in our next episode. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and I'm honored to be able to help you in reclaiming our republic. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.